So where did you build this airplane?
I built it in my garage. But the first airplane I built was built in my garage. And then after that, I built 45 airplanes in a shop, a RAF shop or a scaled shop. And then actually a couple of those were built out of the shop, but you know, more than 40 airplanes. And my most recent airplane is built in my garage.
The most recent one now?
Yeah. The one that almost made it to Oshkosh this year was built in my garage.
So what does the station wagon have to do with the Vary Vigan?
I'm going to show you on the slide.
Okay.
Shall I go ahead and go through some
of
these?
Yeah.
Or do you
go.
Okay. Well, I picked a bunch of stuff from the 70s and so on to kind of give you the flavor of it. Not many people know here, and I doubt that 15% of the audience would even know this, but the Vary Easy was the Easies were built in three different sizes. And here's all of them here. The one that flew over the crowd here, and I'll never forget that moment. It was one of the most emotional things in my life to see the crowd reaction when that little Vary Easy came over in 1975, exactly 40 years ago. And it's the airplane on the left in this slide. It weighed only 399 pounds empty, and it was powered by a Volkswagen engine. And it was a little airplane compared to all the Vary Easies that are out here. In fact, if you want to see it, it's at the EAA Museum, which is less than a mile from it. Okay? The next one was on the right, which is November 4 Easy. That's the prototype of what all the plans built Vary Easies are. So if you see all the Vary Easies out on the flight line, they're built to the plans of that one. Now, at that time, oh, by the way, I didn't put out plans for the little one. I had two engine failures just getting it to Oshkosh and getting it home. And I'm thinking, that's not, you don't want to put out and have people build an airplane in their garage that has a stall speed a lot more than a Piper Cub and then have them have engine failures. So I made a decision that while I'm scraping by on about $5,000 a year at RAF, I'm going to wait another year. And I'm going to build an airplane that can actually use an aircraft engine. So we built an airplane that could use a C-85 or C-90 or an O-200 Continental. And from 1976 until 1980, that was our primary product. We sold those planes for $98. Now in 1980, we came out with a Long Easy, and one of the reasons why is the used Continentals were drying up. You know, and home builders in those days never had the money to buy a new aircraft engine. And there were Lycomings all over the place, ground power units, 125 horse. So I built a bigger airplane that could do the Lycoming, because if you put a Lycoming on a Vary Easy, it falls on its tail and won't fly. So I built a bigger airplane. You can see the different sizes of these guys. And there's the dates and whatever. There's three different Easy. Go on to the next slide.
Well, where's the canard idea come from?
Well, I did it on the Vary Vigan first, and the inspiration had to be the Saab Vigan. Saab Vigan fighter.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I was an Air Force flight test engineer, right. And I would go to a society that you are well familiar with because you always gave the banquet speeches in those days. It was called the Society of Experimental Test Pilots. And remember when the Swedish test pilots came and they showed the development of the Vigan. And I fell in love with that airplane. And that's why I named the Vary Vigan after that. Wow. But let me kind of march through a few of these. I picked out this picture because it has a dial telephone on it. Now, did we have computers and whatever? And
some
CAD
of us are
and
still
whatever?
Trying to master
There's
the
a dial telephone, and there's a slide rule there, too. Next slide. This is what my Vary Vigan looked like when I brought it to Oshkosh in 1972. At that point, I worked for Jim Beattie, and I worked for him for 2 years. It didn't even have a cowling on it, and I put a kind of an aluminum box so it would catch some air and cool the cylinders. I didn't have much time to do anything. It was a very rough airplane in those days. It didn't look beautiful like it does now here in the museum. Next slide. The early 70s. Now, again, this is before the Vary Easy, okay? I quickly put a better paint job on it. I copied the Thunderbirds, and I found myself a week later, after I painted it, I was on the air show schedule in New Orleans, and the Thunderbirds were there. And so I got to do my little air show, and then the Thunderbirds gave theirs, and I had to pull my airplane over to the Thunderbird and get that picture. So that was kind of cool. Okay, next slide. I made three main gear up landings, and nose gears down. So it wasn't because I forgot. The up lock would stick, and I couldn't get the main gear down. And I did three of them, and in every case, I managed to fly the airplane home the same day. But here it is, just touching down, and I think that's the one that I did at Newton on the way to Oshkosh in probably 74. Next slide. Okay, here's the answer to your question. The very beginning and the very easy were both developed on top of a 1966 Dodge Dart station wagon. It was the same car. I bought that car as the first car I bought after I got out of college, and I kept it for a long time. And I measured wind tunnel data the same way that you do in a wind tunnel, but I did it at night because the wind wasn't blowing then, and I'd go about 85 miles an hour in the back roads of Lancaster, and I never once got a ticket. This is the very easy before we brought it to Oshkosh, and it was just half built or so, and that's my stepdaughter in it, and this is the first earliest picture that I've got of it kind of going together. It was a tiny airplane, wheels about that big around. This is the fourth flight of the Verrys, and that's my wife, Carolyn, and I have to think that she was awful brave to do that. If you look carefully in this, you can see that there's some things along a trailing edge of the wing. They're pieces of aluminum that are bent up because I didn't put enough incidence on the canard. And it was not a real safe airplane to fly in those days. It was just early development. And yet I coaxed her into riding with me for a picture. Okay, next slide.
Both of them.
Here it is with Peter Garrison's Melmoth. Again, this is before it went to Oshkosh. Next slide. And here it is. My mom is trying out this special suitcases that would go in it. Remember this?
That's
custom
right.
Suitcase?
I remember that.
Next slide. Okay, now I want to make a point here. There was a roped-off area 40 years ago here, and it says this place is reserved for the Verrys. People knew it was coming because it was in the current issue of Sport Aviation. Right. Jack Cox had run an article on this new revolutionary airplane. And the sign said it's flying nonstop from California. And Dick ended up having high oil temperature and landing, where was it?
Minnesota.
He put it in Minnesota, and I guess he was tired because he spent the night and came in the next morning. And maybe it took that long for the engine to cool down. But I tore out the word nonstop. And I took a guess that it would be here tomorrow, so I wrote that. Now, look at this slide and look at the next one. Here it is. I'm hand propping the airplane for the world distance record flight. We've introduced this new airplane, which people were just really excited about because it didn't look like any other airplane. And we made two attempts to set a closed course distance record at the show. Wow. The first one failed, and Dick will talk about that, I'm sure. But I want you to look at that grass out there. It's all dead. It's all dry. And I want to make the point that the reason it's so green out here now is that we've been smart enough in the last 40 years to put plant food, which is CO2, in the atmosphere. And we don't have that poison. Dick, you want to talk about the records that were set in 75 in June?
Okay, well, that was one of our first ones. I was still in the Air Force then, and I took some leave. And Bert had come out ahead of me, and he left.
Go back to the last slide, please. Don't put this one up yet.
And he left the 7 Easy, the prototype, the little Volkswagen engine, and he had it all set up, ready to go. And then I showed up the day before and got up at O'Dark 30 and went out there, and first time I'd ever seen the airplane, and well, second time I'd seen it.
Second time, yeah.
Maybe I better tell you about the first time.
You had come out and flown it once, I think.
No, you ended up in Tucson, and I was stationed in Davis-Monthan flying A7Ds, I think.
Tucson?
Well, I'll never forget this. And the first time I can remember flying that airplane, and instead of having ailerons, he was really clever, and he put the canard and they would go up and down like this, and you'd have pitch.
Elevons on the canard.
And then they would split like this for roll. And that was a very clever idea because the flight controls were so simple. It was in your hand, and it had two rods about this long, and you could, well, it was
well, the entire pitch and roll control system took up that much room in the airplane. It was from the stick to these two elevons on the canard.
Now, it was
not a very good idea, actually.
Well, yeah, well, it seemed good to start with, but they had one little problem, and I found out about that. And that was really neat. This was really a cool little airplane. It was flying around, and so I was went on downwind. This was at Tucson International Airport on left base to runway 18. A very memorable thing. On downwind, turn base, and now we're in a descent, and so now I'm going to turn final, you know, a couple hundred feet above the ground. And the roll was kind of sluggish, but you could get it to bank. But then when I tried to pull it around, then it started to bank more. So I was pulling, and I tried to roll it out. And when I tried to roll it out, the down elevator went more, and it stalled. And so pulling back and pulling it full right, and the left one stalled, the airplane...
You forgot using your feet, right?
Now the airplane was diving like that. And so then I relaxed it and rolled it out and aborted it. So I came back and taxied up, and Bert was in the terminal there, and I told Bert what happened, and he says, "Oh, Dick, I forgot to tell you about that." Now, we flew that airplane out here, and it was a long day, and we got a late start and having some engine problems and trying to make it nonstop, and it was a long day, and that airplane didn't go all that fast. And so it was time in the evening, and I really wanted to get nonstop, but it wasn't going to work. And I'm flying along, and I looked over there, and there's Worthington Airport. And there was a big non-runway, and right next to it was a motel something or other. And it says, "Hey, come on and land." And so we did.
Now, I'll give you a little bit of technical information. First of all, I'll admit I wasn't a very good airplane designer in 1974 or 75. I reasoned that if you put elevons on the canard, they would work like elevons on the back wing of an airplane. The thing that I forgot was if you make this canard lift more to roll left, that the canard downwash increases and it hits the top of the back wing and it tries to make that wing roll to the right. So they're fighting each other. And I didn't figure that out right away. And I had an airplane with totally unacceptable roll control. And you're supposed to, you know, fighter pilots don't know this, but sometimes you have to use your rudder pedals on a general aviation airplane. But at any rate, we solved that later without killing anybody, fortunately. But I'm embarrassed by how crude the tools I had to work with and how stupid I was as a designer in the early days. Yeah. And I think the fact that I survived flying six different first flights was just pure luck. Wow. The last one was with Mike Melville in the Boomerang, and I had decided a decade or so earlier that I would never fly a first flight again. But I couldn't ask my best friend to go and fly that weird of an airplane on the first flight.